Ms. Vogts, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm here today representing Luke Cochran. May it please the court, my name is Diana Vogts. I work with Sheriff's Bruno and Vogt in Omaha, Nebraska. Unfortunately, due to our conflict with the society today, we have this new phenomenon called the harassment provision. Sometimes they're necessary. In this case, it was not necessary and did not meet the statutory terms. But more than that, even though this appears to be the first time it's occurred, Mr. Cochran was well able, within his rights, to appear through counsel instead of appearing in person. And my reasoning behind that is this. This court has repeatedly said that an application for a protection order is a matter of the order to show cause. And therefore, the burden is on the petitioner to prove at the hearing that they are entitled to the protection order. Judge is supposed to look at the petition first when he signs it. Then he is supposed to, if he wants to, ask questions of the applicant, or the applicant can have an attorney there to ask questions. But if the respondent is able to send an attorney who can question the petitioner on the actual facts, or offer information, or through cross-examination, demonstrate that there is insufficient information to grant a harassment protection order, then there is no need for the respondent himself to appear.
Were there any questioning done regarding the actual allegations in this matter on cross-examination?
Yes, Your Honor. Ms. Weatherly did admit that remark that Mr. Cochran made about the death of the Excel roofing was hope that nothing like that happens to us. Also, through a colloquy with the judge during the cross-examination, it was pointed out, and this was the thing that we thought was very important to point out to the county court, that although Ms. Weatherly purported to be terrified, the incidents that she was complaining of occurred on July 28th. She made out the paperwork on August 2nd. She did not file it.
But that doesn't go to the actual incidents. That goes to, I believe your argument was kind of intent why she filed it at that time.
Intent.
Not, but it didn't go back to the actual facts of the incident.
Okay, the facts of the incident, the petition was not offered. So the only facts of the incident that she discussed were, she discussed that he'd made the remark about possible, that something had happened at the after another roofing company broke up and there was a murder, and hope that didn't happen to us. She said there was some conflict during the day. Then she recounted the incident where after they had broken into his office at the building where he was going to come the next day. And she testified to that, so that is in the record.
Was the judge looking at a statutory provision when he said that your client had to be present?
I believe he was, Your Honor. The statute does say that if you ask for a hearing, the respondent must appear.
So how do you respond to that?
That he appeared through counsel. And this court has held on other occasions, for example, in the Turbin versus Transport case, that an attorney could appear without the client to ask for a default judgment to be set aside. In this case, because the burden of proof is on the petitioner who is seeking to have the petition or the order granted, it's their burden of proof. So, on the other hand, I mean, it is a risk. If the respondent chooses not to appear, then he can't offer any testimony, clearly. But if cross-examination can establish or bring into focus for the judge that there may not be all the grounds necessary for a harassment protection order, including a custom and practice and multiple incidents of harassment. And I understand totally Judge Huber's concern, but one of the primary incidents that she complained about was after they broke into his office with the use of a locksmith. They found a gun in his drawer. Mr. Cochran was not present. That could not have been part of a course of conduct and practice of Mr. Cochran harassing Ms. Weatherly, since he was planning to come in the next day, get his things. She decided she should go into his office first, and she found a gun. He was not there. Could have had no intent, and a harassment protection order does require intent of the respondent to harass or put the petitioner in fear, and that the petitioner be actually in fear. Then Mr. Cochran did drive by, see what was going on, and stopped, and I'm sure that he wanted to have a few words with her, but didn't get into the building. But this situation is much more like, and I apologize for mispronouncing this, Nothick versus Hahn, the incident where the woman had her dog outside, and the neighbor's dog and an owner went by. The one dog approached, and after the dog was taken in the house, the neighbor came after her and began screaming and abusing her in an inappropriate manner for having her dog loose. But it was found on appeal that that was not a course or pattern of conduct, that it was an incident, it was probably inappropriate, it was not good behavior, but it did not constitute sound basis for a harassment protection order.
Here we arguably have two different, setting the gun aside, if we set the gun aside, there are arguably two other different instances, right? We have the statement made in the beginning of the day, and then Ms. Weatherly testified to a gesture of some kind. Are those two things sufficient to make a pattern of conduct? What's a pattern?
Well, I think we have to look at the statute as a whole. And the statute requires not just a pattern, but with the intent to harass. And in this case, Mr. Cochran, who'd owned the building for a really long time, sees someone in his office. His intent was maybe to yell at her, was maybe to do something, but there was no pattern of conduct. There was nothing he was going to do. There's no evidence that he ever made any attempt to contact her after that. And there was 2 months between the time she filled out the paperwork and the time that she actually filed it. So if there'd been any additional incidents, that would probably show a pattern.
This protection order expires on October 5th, I believe, of this year.
I believe it doesn't expire till December.
Well, at the conclusion of the protection order, will this matter be moot if there's not a judgment made, or if there's not a ruling made by this court before that date?
I believe that the issue of whether or not you can appear to counsel rather than in person would not be moot, and that that is one of the exception to the mootness doctrine. So, but I think when you look at the totality of the circumstances, against the wording of the statute, which requires the intent to harass and put in fear, and that the person must be legitimately in fear, and the record presented no evidence that other than on that one single day, as of course of that one single incident, Ms. Weatherly had any concerns.
After the show cause hearing, did the order that was ultimately entered in writing by the trial judge rest at all on the failure to personally appear as opposed to appearing through counsel?
I believe that played a part. I can't tell you what the judge was thinking, but I can tell
the
you.
The order itself doesn't make any reference. So you're basically reading into that statements made on the record during the hearing.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Is Mr. Cochran subject to any collateral consequences as a result of this protection order being entered, such that there may be a reason for us to review it, even if it does reach a point of mootness?
Mr. Cochran has not. I believe that Ms. Cochran filed a complaint about the gun. And Sarpy County may about it, but that's all I'm aware of. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. Seldom?
Seldom, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. May I please support counsel? My name is William Selby. I'm appearing here at Fitzgerald Shore on behalf of the appellee, Michelle Weatherly. We do rely on our arguments submitted in the brief. And very, very briefly to point out, at the hearing on December 7th, before before the county court judge. Ms. Weatherly testified in detail. We tried to elicit some testimony about 3 years, and it's on in the Bill of Exceptions, page 10, lines 21 through 25, page 11, lines 1 through 6, where I asked Ms. Weatherly some questions about the initial 3 years of the relationship between herself, the petitioner, and the respondent, Mr. Cochran, and their roofing business. That was objected to, and the objection was sustained, and then we moved specifically to the events in her affidavit in support of the petition for the protection order in regard to the events that July 28th, early morning, July 29th. She specifically testified on the record about her perception of threats and harassment by the respondent, and in conclusion, at the end of the hearing, the judge ruled that based on the testimony presented here, the court grants temporary order or affirms the permanent harassment and protection order on behalf of the petitioner.
Is it your position that the law requires a respondent who has requested a show cause hearing to appear personally, either with or without counsel? Or do you agree with your opponent that the law would permit someone to request a hearing but appear only through counsel?
In 31 years of civil practice, I've been an insurance defense litigator. This is about as much of a criminal proceeding as I've ventured into in that entire time. As a matter of Mr. Cochran's due process rights, and in this confrontational situation, quasi-criminal in my experience, I think he has to appear. I think the statute, 28.311.09.8b, incorporates a provision that says he must appear. And this is set out in our brief, and it's set out in the, I think it's CAM, K-A-H-M versus Wester case.
That case is distinguishable, is it not? Because neither counsel nor the respondent appeared in that matter.
Right, right. That was a pro se case. The respondent petitioned, or the respondent notified for the motion or the hearing to vacate the temporary protection order, and then the respondent failed to appear. But as I read the statute, it incorporates the provision that there, and maybe this is what we lacked in our case. There was no oppositional testimony to the testimony in detail provided by Ms. Weatherly as to the extents of the threats or the harassment. And I think if the respondent isn't required to appear, I guess all you get is some attempt at impeachment by counsel appearing on their behalf. And I don't know if that's good enough under the requirements. Certainly, the petition establishes a foundation for the temporary protection order. A hearing at the behest of the respondent, who then elects not to appear, is to contest that basis.
But the application or petition wasn't offered in evidence, right?
It was not. Clearly, there could be other material in the record in this case that isn't in the record. But what you do have is very clear testimony from the petitioner as to specific details of the harassment over the course of a day, 24 hours, and several instances where ultimately, in the end, the respondent arrives on the scene and tries to force his way past a off-duty Omaha police officer to get into the building and makes physical gestures and threats.
So to return, perhaps to take it a step further, assume for the moment that we would say a respondent must be allowed to appear by counsel and does not have to personally appear if he chooses to send counsel in his place. Assume that's where we are. What effect does that have on the outcome of this case, if any?
None, because we had specific testimony as to the extent. We put on sufficient proof to establish threats and harassment between the petitioner and the respondent. And the significant challenge to that is in the record, and that was, well, respondent's counsel had sent a letter of settlement and maybe a demand for civil litigation at the time the petitioner finally got around to commencing the protection order process.
So that's an issue of credibility. It was decided adversely to your opponent's client, and while that may not be binding on us, we certainly could consider it, right?
Yes, Judge. Absolutely. Because the judge saw Ms. Weatherly testify about these events, saw her demeanor. She was clearly reliving some of these events when we were there before the judge, and he's the best judge to, you know, it doesn't come across in the paper record.
So this is here in front of us under an equitable standard of review. We may consider or count and may give weight to the fact that the trial judge saw and heard the witnesses.
I think you should give credence to the...
But we're not bound to do so.
I don't think you're bound to, but...
All right.
Reading of the transcript, it appears the judge had this belief that the respondent needed to personally appear early on. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Did that belief affect or limit the petitioner's introduction of evidence at all?
We did elect not to call the police officers. We subpoenaed two police officers for this hearing. One did appear, was in the courtroom, and discussions with the petitioner at the time of the hearing, we elected to just stand on her testimony.
But the court did not prevent you from putting on more evidence?
The court did not prevent us from putting on any additional evidence.
What's your argument as to whether this constitutes a pattern?
The pattern... Some of the cases distinguish the extent of, I think there is a pattern here because we had set out to establish in her preliminary testimony that these threats and harassment had built up over the course of their business relationship over the course of 3 years up until this time, July 28, 2017, when he resigned. Or respondent's theory, they fire him.
But did that make it into the record, the pre-July 28th?
Very little of it made it into the record.
And that's because it wasn't included in the application for a harassment protection order, isn't
that
right?
Partly true. Partly because my questions in regard to those events were objected to and the objection was sustained. And at the court's behest, we were encouraged to move to this event. These events occurring over the course of July 28th and July 29th. And there was some discussion on the record about what makes a pattern. And I think there was a cell phone case mentioned very briefly. There were some other, discussion by the court about the extent of what makes a pattern, how quickly events must occur to be a pattern. And we put on our testimony vis-a-vis the testimony of Ms. Weatherly.
If we're limited to the July 28th events, do we have a pattern?
Yes.
On what basis?
On the basis that initial discussion in the presence of the police officer included the verbal threat, other threats or disagreements, harassment by Mr. Cochran throughout the day, and then we have the events related to changing the locks by the lessee, Ms. Weatherly, recovery of all the business property in the office of the respondent, and then the discovery of actual weapons and the threats when Mr. Cochran discovered that the police officer was at the scene and Ms. Weatherly was in his office. I think those are sufficient to constitute the pattern of harassment.
Is the existence of the gun harassment?
No, but it must have provoked some response by Mr. Cochran, because personally I can't imagine approaching the door, seeing an off-duty policeman telling me I can't enter the premises, and even if I own the building, trying to defy the officer and go inside and then making physical gestures and threats at your tenant. So I, the gun itself coincides with other harassment issues off the record. There were verbal threats that we couldn't get on the record related to threats of physical violence between the respondent and the petitioner. Any further questions? We'd ask you to affirm the actions of the county court in affirming the temporary protection. Thank you.
Thank you. You very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 41 seconds. Ms. Vogt.
Yes, I would first just like to ask everyone to disregard statements about evidence that was not actually presented in the record. And secondly, I would like to point out that Judge Huber specifically found that finding the gun was an incident of harassment. Mr. Cochran wasn't there, whatever she took out of that. And also, Mr. Selby's comment, and it was very true, these people worked together every single day for more than 3 years. Nothing was put in the petition about any prior threats. Nothing was added in the 2 months before she filed the petition. And Judge Huber was wrong when he found that finding the gun was a second incident. I would ask you to reverse the decision and find that and respond again.
Thank you very much.